Welcome to the Customer Service Gold Dust Podcast. This is the UK's only podcast where customer experience professionals share their journey, insights, challenges, and current focus in an ever-changing customer service landscape. My name is Gavin Scott, and I invite you to join us as we delve into another great conversation. Whether you want to increase customer satisfaction or decrease customer complaints, there's sure to be plenty of gold dust that will help you to stand out. Hello and welcome to the Customer Service Gold Dust Podcast. I'm your host, Gavin Scott. Now, today's guest was recently ranked as the third most influential CX professional by the Customer Experience magazine. Together with her co-founder, she's been rescuing and transforming the customer experience of businesses of all sizes for over a decade, resulting in some of the highest growth rates in their industry. Let me introduce you to the founder and lead consultant at ThinkWow. It's Rebecca Brown. Hello, Rebecca.
Hi, Gavin. Wow, what an introduction. I'm not sure I could follow that. That's brilliant.
You know, and I've said this before in the podcast, what I like to do is almost bring my guests in, Rebecca, with a little bit of rock star applause. So you can almost hear the crowd in the background going, come on, bring her on.
I love it.
Good. Well, listen, it's great to have you. And, you know, thank you for making time for the podcast today. I remember first coming across you when I was attended online one of the awards international events. You were doing a bit of hosting, and I thought, I'd love to get Rebecca onto the podcast. And so I think since about November last year, I've been, well, sending you messages and trying to get you booked in. So I'm so pleased that we eventually managed to get a slot in the diary. And it's great to have you.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Yeah, I always enjoy chatting about CX. It's one of those things that you don't meet enough CX practitioners or people who are just as enthusiastic about CX as you are on a day-to-day basis. And if I sort of talk to all my friends and family like this, they tend to switch off quite quickly. Is there any chance to talk about this? And I jump at the chance.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny you say that because, I mean, I used to be in the army, right? And when I had conversations with some of my friends and colleagues who used to be in the army, we used to have great conversations. We used to love talking about it. But then when you talk about the army to someone who's not been in the army, they're not particularly interested. And I guess it's quite similar, isn't it? You know, when it comes to CX, you know, we're all, you know, passionate about, you know, helping to make sure that, you know, organizations have great conversations with their customers. And, you know, sometimes other people are not as interested. So you're right. It's great to speak to someone who's got a passion for CX. And I'm sure the conversation is going to be, well, a great one as well.
It always surprises me, actually, because I think that's actually a really good example you've used with the army, because I think for most of us, we can't really imagine life in the army. It's such a different way of life to everything else that we're used to. But I feel like with customer experience, we're all customers and we all experience varying degrees of customer service every single day. So I sort of feel like everybody should be able to chat about customer experience and get as excited about it. But maybe I expect too much.
Yeah, this is it. And I'm the same. And I think I get so frustrated when I observe or have an experience myself. And I think to myself, wow, it's not going to take a lot to get that right. Well, why can't you do that? You know, some of the simple things, some of the basics that you think, you know what, this is just common sense in terms of the approach you should take here. But I'm frustrated, probably like you, about the amount of interactions that I have where I think to myself, am I about to give you some money for this? I mean, it doesn't feel right, but am I about to pay you for this? Because it just doesn't, you know, it's just not quite working out in my head. I mean, do you feel the same, Rebecca? I mean, what got you into really focusing on customer service? Let's start there.
Well, I think it's always bothered me. And I think that's really how I fell into customer service and then later on fell into customer experience. And really, I've always been a bit of a frustrated customer, I suppose. So that was kind of where it started, was anywhere we went, we would talk about how things could be better. And God, isn't it a shame that they've, you know, put out the butter and it's still rock hard and it could have been ready to spread on the bread, but it's not. And, you know, really simple things like that. And at a sort of fairly young age, I actually ended up managing luxury retail art galleries. And that, I suppose, was my first proper foray into customer service, but not just customer service, actually selling through excellent service, and really recognizing that the two were so intrinsically linked that if you got the customer experience and the customer service just right, the selling was almost, you could do it in your sleep. So that was kind of the first experience I had of it. And I later ended up applying for a customer experience role without realizing that customer service and customer experience were different disciplines. So I just assumed, well, I'm qualified for this. I've been doing customer service all my life. And actually, when I stepped into the role, I was really shocked because it wasn't what I was expecting. And I had a really steep learning curve and I almost quit, almost left. I was like, blimey, this is not what I was expecting. But I didn't quit. I worked through that learning curve. I worked through the pain points and fell in love with customer experience to the point where, you know, now it's everything, you know, our whole business revolves around customer experience. So I'm glad that happened.
Brilliant. And before we start to look at some of the things that you do at ThinkWow, what would you say is a difference then? Because you recognize that you notice the difference between customer service and customer experience. And so for you, what's the difference between the two, Rebecca?
It's a really big difference. And I think that it's one that we need to help the rest of the business world catch up on. I think there are still a lot of people who assume if they've got a customer service department, that means their customer experience is fine. But actually, for me, customer service is usually delivered by one department. It's one set of people's responsibility, usually an inbound team. And it's often very reactive, helping to solve maybe a current issue that customer has, answering their questions, being sort of a bit of a troubleshooting department. Whereas for me, customer experience is everything. Your customer experience is everything that your customer sees, hears, feels, experiences from the very first moment they ever hear of your brand, all the way through their life cycle with you, touching every single department. And everyone in the business has a responsibility to help impact that CX. So, you know, essentially, if you want to have a good customer experience strategy, you need to make that move away from reactive, helping to solve current issues, to proactive and solving ongoing recurring issues to drive increased loyalty.
Yeah, I love that. So, I mean, just to give a quick summary and playback, so customer service, often it's one department, sometimes it's an inbound team. They can be quite reactive in terms of dealing with either emails or phone calls that are coming in. And customer experience is everything that the customer sees, hears, and feels, you know, right from the brand, the initial touch point that they have, right through to the product or the service that you might provide and the experience that goes with that as well. So, you know, that's a bit of a summary of what you just said there, but I love that. You know, it's spot on. Am I right in saying that you've not long set up your business? Is that right, Rebecca?
Yeah, so we officially founded the business in November 2019, but actually, in reality, we actually started the business a lot later than that. I registered with Companies House and then very quickly won a full-time contract with a very large business that felt like it would be too good a learning opportunity for me to pass up. So I did that for sort of 11 months, and my partner, Dan, joined the business at that point to keep going with ThinkWow. And it was really only when that contract came to an end, right in the middle of lockdown, that we started the business together and started actually working with our own clients.
Wow. So right in the middle of lockdown was when you set up the business. I mean,
yeah,
that must have been a challenge for yourself and Dan, right?
Yeah. Do you know what? It's a really funny one. I think because it's what we did, we didn't know a different way. You know, we haven't ever set up a business not during lockdown. So I suppose from that perspective, in some ways, it was maybe easier for us than it was for businesses who had been going a long time, because we were able to build our strategy around the current climate and not have to just edit it to fit in with the current climate. So I think it actually worked really well for us. Believe it or not, the thing that was most terrifying to me when we set up the business was having to go out face to face networking and find clients, and lockdown immediately got rid of that as a problem. And, you know, Dan had the idea to move online and actually look at LinkedIn as our sort of networking opportunity and our way to build our brand, and that worked incredibly well for us. All of our clients to date have either come directly to us via LinkedIn through inbound leads or from recommendations from clients who we found on LinkedIn. So for us, really, lockdown was probably the making of ThinkWow.
And that's it. And when you think about it like that, when other organizations were looking to pivot away from what they did on a day-to-day basis to something new in the new world. Well, the new world for you was just how it was anyway. And so in terms of the approach, there wasn't a need to pivot. It was a case of, okay, this is how the landscape lies right now. Let's see what we can do to make the best of the situation. And so everything came through LinkedIn, right?
Yeah, it's sort of, I guess it's a fairly slow build, but really when the pandemic hit, we decided quite early on that our business strategy wasn't going to be about going out and winning customers. It was going to be about building a brand reputation. So the first 6 months of ThinkWow, that was all we focused on. We didn't try and win any business. We didn't try and convert anyone. We literally just focused on becoming established professionals within the industry, getting a known reputation for really talking about things in a sensible way, having, you know, the right answers for the right problems. And that, because that was our focus, it happened quite naturally and quite quickly. And we found that the inbound leads followed at around that time, about 6 months into the LinkedIn journey.
And I've seen, you know, ThinkWow appear on some quite, you know, big events. If I think about some of the awards international stuff that I've come across, I'm sure that I saw ThinkWow as one of the key sponsors. Am I right in saying that, Rebecca?
Yeah, we're sponsoring the upcoming UK Business and Innovation Awards. So we've worked in partnership with Awards International sort of on and off really for the last 12 months. But it's been a key part of our strategy really, is supporting other professionals within the customer experience industry, getting to know people, helping out with things like that. You mentioned obviously that we'd hosted some events for them as well. I hosted the UK Complaint Handling Awards and the UK Employee Experience Awards. So, you know, it's been a really great way for us to just get to know people, but also on top of that, actually learn some of the fantastic innovation that's going on across the UK.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll let you into a little secret. You're not going to, do you know who the host is for the UK Business and Innovation Awards is?
It's Tom, isn't it?
I'm not sure. We'll have to find out. We'll have to find out who.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Yes. Interesting.
Yeah, an interesting one. So we'll have to just watch this space. And so when I look at LinkedIn and I see some of the recommendations that and the endorsements that companies have put that have worked with you, it really looks like you provide this end-to-end service with their complete customer journey and looking at their brand, their vision, their mission, and all that good stuff. So just tell us a bit more about some of the things that you do with your clients today, Rebecca.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's essentially it. We work with our clients to help them achieve their wider organizational objectives. You know, essentially, our services focus on helping them to attract, win, and retain more loyal customers, but with customer experience underpinning all of that strategy. So, you know, we help them depending on where their business need is. It may well be that it actually starts right at the beginning in looking at their culture, looking at their values, looking at how ready they even are for organizational change, and helping them to really prepare for the very best response for any change and driving that engagement with their employees. But sometimes we can come in a bit later. You know, if they've got a really strong culture already, they've already got a very engaged workforce, we don't necessarily need to build those foundations with them. So we can actually come in a bit later, perhaps helping them set up a full feedback strategy. And, you know, I think that's often a really good one, because I think, again, much like with customer service and businesses thinking, well, we have a customer service team, so our customer experience must be perfect. I think often a lot of brands feel like, well, we ask for feedback, so we've got a feedback strategy. And it's only really when you dig down deeper and find out, you know, you ask the questions like, okay, well, who's responsible for getting your feedback? Who's responsible for making sure that your customers aren't over-surveyed, that the questions make your customers feel valued, that information that comes in is actually dealt with in the right way? You know, even down to things like who makes sure that you get permission to use it in marketing if it's really great feedback. All of that can go into a full feedback strategy that helps your business not just learn from your customers, but actually use those loyal customers to help attract more customers.
And in terms of walking the talk, Rebecca, it certainly looks like, you know, from your LinkedIn profile, you definitely do that in terms of using feedback that's come from your clients. You showcase that. And then I guess you put a bit of a story behind it that makes clients think we need to do more of that, because we have lots of data and lots of feedback. We got to think about how can we best showcase this and make good use of this data and just get the message out there.
Yeah, and it's such a simple switch away from just using feedback to learn from your customers in terms of what you can improve, to saying, well, actually, this is a huge asset to us. You know, our happy customers are our biggest brand advocates, and if we can help them spread the word on our behalf, then it helps so much. You know, consumers trust online reviews as much as they do a recommendation from family or friends. So, you know, having those out there can be a really powerful conversion tool. And, you know, that's the thing that we work with quite a lot with our clients, is actually it's not just about customer experience, but it's your sales strategy, using customer experience to kind of underpin it.
And I know you do a lot of work, and you mentioned that this whole piece around online reviews. And so how do you make a case for online reviews with some of the clients who you work with them?
Well, I think generally speaking, that the great thing about our clients coming through to us predominantly from LinkedIn is that they have seen us on LinkedIn for months. They've built up an awareness of our brand and our approach long before they ever speak to us. So that expectation is already pretty much in their brain before they ever even contact us, that we probably will talk to them about feedback. We probably will help them get their online reviews out there. And, you know, I think it's very rare that we chat to someone who says, oh, well, hang on a minute, no, that doesn't sound like what I want to do, because our marketing attracts the right kind of people to us. So, you know, I think it's a really important element to any business's strategy. Whether you're a small business and you're only just starting out, it can really help to build trust and that reputation that's really important. Or if you're a large business, you know, you could have a huge volume of reviews online, and it could even be a case of us coming in to say, look, you've already got the volume of reviews. It's what you need to do with them that needs to change. It's how you respond to them. It's your online presence in terms of the tone of voice of your reply, for example.
There's certainly something you've mentioned there that can't be stepped over. But when you say, you know, your strategy is key, and we can't emphasize that enough in terms of really spending some time thinking about, okay, you know, what is the long-term plan here? What is it we're trying to achieve? And just getting yourself some real clarity in terms of the strategy. And then once you have that, then you can think about, okay, what are some of the stepping stones that are going to help us to move towards making sure that we deliver against that? So getting your strategy, whether you're small, medium or large, massively important, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I think, you know, that's one of the things that we were really lucky to have from early on, because we both came from strategic leadership backgrounds. There was no quibble about, well, where do we start? You know, we both sat down, we hammered out our strategy, we made sure we agreed on it, that we were both very clear in what the direction was we wanted to take and what the priorities were going to be along that mission. And I think that's a critical point to make, is that regardless of how big your business is, everybody needs to be behind the same strategy, and you can own different elements of that strategy. So, for example, if you've got wider organizational objectives, and one person owns the marketing strategy, one person owns the operational strategy, one person owns the customer strategy, that's fine. But everyone needs to be pulling in the same direction still, and everyone needs to understand their role in that wider strategy in order for their individual parts of it to make sense. So a lot of what we do is actually around key stakeholder engagement. And we've recently worked with a client and had such a fantastic time, because we actually approached it not just as, well, you know, who are your key stakeholders? They're the senior management team. We recognized from early on that in order for us to achieve the goal, which was to take them from really good, strong customer experience to consistently great customer experience. So not a huge step, but just getting that consistency in place. We recognized that actually we needed the whole organization to be key stakeholders. So, you know, we've got HGV drivers taking part in journey mapping sessions. We've got people from all across the organization getting involved to help us drive that engagement and the awareness of what the big picture is and what we're trying to achieve. And it's been such a refreshing project to work on, because everybody gets it.
Love it. And how did you come up with Think Wow? Where did the name come from?
You know, it just was always the name. It's really weird. We talked about, so when I started looking for work just before starting Think Wow, I was looking for work in the South Coast, and there just weren't the customer experience vacancies that I wanted. They weren't for organizations that shared my values. They didn't feel like a good fit for me. And it really, you know, it was only when Dan said, hang on a minute, why are you looking to find an organization that fits your values perfectly, that will give you enough time with the girls, that gives you kind of all the sort of work-life balance that you're looking for, when you could just create your own? So he sort of planted the idea in my head and said, look, start your own consultancy, I'll support you, which was very kind of him. And so I sat and started where most small business owners start, with the fun bits of designing logos, and completely ignored anything like a business plan or anything like that. And just literally started playing around with colors and thinking, you know, what do I want people to think when they see us? What do I want the impression to be? And it just sort of evolved from there, really, because it wasn't about having, I didn't want a stuffy business name, like, you know, Brown and Co, or, you know, Rebecca Brown Consulting or anything like that. I just wanted people to think, wow. And that's kind of where it came from. I just thought, well, you know, let's just go for it. See what people say. And actually, you know, we had really mixed reception from family and friends when we first showed them the logo and told them the name. But no matter how hard we tried, nothing else felt right after we settled on Think Wow. So we stuck with it.
Yeah, love it. Love it. Man, it's a great story. And it's interesting, isn't it? There's a few things that come from that. You know, often people, when they're setting up their organization or a small business, they focus a lot on websites and names and colors. And then I say to them, have you got any customers? Customers? No, we'll do that later, Gav. Well, maybe you should start getting a few customers first before you start spending all this money. Because ultimately, customers, you know, are the lifeblood of the business, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And often family, yes. I mean, the amount of things that I've shared with my family, they go, really, Gav? I'm like, don't you like that? No. I'm like, okay. But often we do listen to people, don't we? And we think, you know what? Maybe there's some sense behind what they're saying. But you know what? From my experience, the best approach is to just ignore them and crack on and be passionate about what you do. And it seems like, you know, Think Wow, I think it's a great name. And it's certainly doing you justice now, isn't it?
Thank you. I mean, I think the thing that I've learned in the, you know, huge amount of time I've been in business myself, just over 2 years now, it's just that actually there are two things really that matter. The first is trusting your instincts. And the second is that it just doesn't matter what your name is, because that's not what will build the reputation. It's all about your culture and your values and how you present yourself to the world. So actually, you know, if I could go back and tell myself to do anything differently, it would be to say, well, hang on a minute, think about your values first, nail those down, and then the rest will follow. But as it is, they came pretty quickly afterwards, so it wasn't the end of the world.
And certainly for anyone out there who's listening, who's thinking about setting up their own consultancy, then certainly great advice. Think about your values. Get them, well, aligned first and before anything else. And think about, you know, who can you work with that's going to share those sort of values? Because that in itself will help to make sure that the relationships moving forward are going to be fruitful and positive and powerful relationships. Okay, we talked before about, you know, some of the frustrations that we have around the customer service that we get today. And when we think about the current landscape then, Rebecca, you know, what would you say are some of the key skills that people need to have in order to provide, you know, exceptional customer experiences today?
The key skills aren't that different to what they've always been, to be honest with you. But I think that there needs to be a recognition that we have collectively all gone through a pretty tough time the last 2 years. There aren't many people who have just had a really relaxing, lovely time of it. You know, psychologically, change is a very unsettling thing for anyone to go through, especially if it's prolonged change without an obvious end in sight. So recognizing that and bringing empathy to the table is hugely important, both for customers and also for colleagues as well. But I think really it's about combining that empathy with an analytical approach that helps you to identify the best places you can improve, what's going to get you your best return on investment quickly, so that firstly the processes and the changes you're making start to get some nice quick wins, so that again that engagement is driven higher throughout the organization, because you can say, look what we're doing, look how well it's working, and then you can sort of follow everything from there. So yeah, I'd say the empathy and analytical approach, perhaps with a little bit of resilience thrown in there as well.
Yeah, most definitely. And you're right. So, you know, you think about what we've all gone through, you know, having that empathy and that connection with people, massively important. And yeah, you're right. It's about analysing the approach and thinking about the best places to operate in. And in terms of, you know, building up some momentum, think about those quick wins, some of the green shoots that you can, yeah, build some confidence from and then take it from there rather than going too big too quickly. Okay, and I can't not talk about this because you are a key advocate for anti-bullying, right? So tell me some more about that.
Yeah, so again, that was something that really just sort of evolved organically. I was bullied throughout secondary school and in the early parts of my career, I was bullied by several line managers and I really struggled with it. I was not a particularly confident person, certainly as a younger woman. I was scared of my own shadow. You know, I wouldn't go to the shop for my mum to get milk in case someone spoke to me. I was generally that afraid of people. And gradually I found my confidence sort of probably through learning, through school and starting university, meeting other tall people. I very much felt like I was bullied because I was tall and that I had to shrink to fit in with people. And it really was only as I got older and moved past those bullying experiences that I recognized that it was never about me and it was never about my physical attributes. It was always about the bully and about their need to feel the power, to feel like they were in control and to regain some of their own confidence, I suppose. So I think, you know, I started talking quite openly on LinkedIn about my bullying experience. And so many people reached out to share their own problems or, you know, to tell me that they were currently experiencing it, that they were having problems with their employer. And, you know, I was both humbled, but also completely taken aback by it because I wasn't qualified to say to them, look, this is what you should do. And I struggled with it for a little while thinking, well, these people keep contacting me and I don't have an answer for them. So eventually I decided that actually wasn't good enough and I took ownership of it and created just a basic landing page on our ThinkWow website that I could direct people to, that signposts them to official places they can get help, that signposts them to the British Association of Counsellors and Psychotherapists in case that was something that they might be able to take advantage of, but also to ACAS, you know, it may well be that they're an employer. And that was kind of where it started, really. And since that time, we now offer anti-bullying training for organisations. We launched a free anti-bully health check to any business who wants to just see how safe their staff feel and to see if there's anything they could do to make them feel a bit safer. And, you know, we work with people to try and support them where we can.
Wow, I love that. That's great. I mean, you know, and as you were just sharing that story then, I mean, my uncle is 6'10", right?
Wow.
And the amount of times when I walk around with him, people stop and take pictures of him.
Oh, gosh.
And if I think about it, I say, well, isn't that good, Gaz, that, you know, people want to take pictures? He's like, Gav, this has happened my whole life.
My whole life, yeah.
You know, it's so frustrating. I mean, who do people think they are? They can stop and take pictures of me because I'm tall. And it's like, yeah, I didn't realize that. So, yeah, as you were sharing that story, it just made me think about what's it like for him? What a great piece of work. But it sounds like there's some great tools that you've got that you can share with organizations when it comes to helping to make sure that they're absolutely on point when it comes to the approach they take, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, there is a long way for us to go, sadly. You know, we launched the free anti-bullying health check and, it was like crickets. We had, I think, 5 or 6 organisations contact us to say, yes, please, we'd like to take you up on it. And I think people are afraid to ask the question. They would rather live in blissful ignorance and think, well, we've got a happy team, haven't we, than to actually know where they could improve. And, you know, I think we work with the Ben Cohen Stand Up Foundation, who help to work against bullying. And I had a really good conversation with Ben Cohen about it about this time last year. He's really angry and he's really frustrated because he's been trying to work against bullying for a decade and he still sees the same struggles and the same kind of blissful ignorance, I suppose, as when he started. So the more we can have conversations like this, the more we can get people thinking about how they can become active bystanders and take a stand against bullying, the better, really.
Love it. So anyone listening, make sure that you get in touch with Rebecca and see if you can get that free anti-bullying health check carried out with your organization. Now, Rebecca, before our conversation, I did mention to you that I recently got a new puppy, okay?
Yeah.
And I mentioned, didn't I, that he was currently asleep when we started the podcast. But as he stands, he's right now sat next to me and I can feel I can feel him wanting to maybe go for a wee or something else. So, and I think we were close to the end anyway. So let me just ask you one final question. So what's your gold dust that you would like to share with the listeners when it comes to creating exceptional customer experiences? Give us a few top tips.
Yeah. Do you know what? I actually love the fact that your podcast is called Customer Service Gold Dust because it ties in with what my piece of advice is, really. And that is to learn to love complaints. Complaints are gold dust. You do not get anywhere if you are not open to and encouraging and making it easy for your customers to raise complaints and concerns with you. You know, too often businesses say their customers are happy because they don't get complaints, but actually we know that on average 91% of unhappy consumers won't raise a complaint. They will just take their business elsewhere. So if you're lucky enough to get feedback that's negative, it's about trying to be as objective about it as possible. Don't take it personally. Learn to look for the little nuggets inside that feedback that can help you shape the customer experience for the rest of your customers, and really to tie that in to a wider feedback strategy. A feedback strategy can make such a transformational difference to how your business runs, how it learns from its customers. So it's a really good place to start.
Love it. Learn to love your complaints. Absolutely. And you're right, yeah. 91% of customers, you've said, will just walk away. Right. Mm-hmm. So when you get those complaints that come through, look at it as an opportunity to look for those golden nuggets or that bit, those bits of gold dust, and make the necessary changes that will help to make sure that other customers aren't just disappearing as well. So I love that as a final piece of gold dust there. So Rebecca, what's the best way for our listeners to get in touch with you and find out more?
So they can either contact me through our website, which is just www.thinkwow.co.uk, or contact me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active there. So if you want to connect with me on LinkedIn, I share regular tips. I also talk a lot about cake and walking. So as long as you don't mind it not being purely customer experience, then send me a connection request.
Well, from a personal perspective, I love a good walk followed by a piece of cake. So you know what? I'm going to be staying tuned to some of the insights that you share on LinkedIn. So, Rebecca, thank you for making the time for the Customer Service Golders podcast. I look forward to seeing you, be it face-to-face or online, in the not-too-distant future.
Thanks so much for having me, Gavin.
You're more than welcome. Bye for now. Thank you for listening to the Customer Service Gold Dust podcast. I'm sure that there were plenty of ideas you can take away and apply to your business today. Three things to do now. Subscribe to the podcast so that you can benefit from every episode. I'd also love to see a little review as well. This helps to spread the word and the gold dust, of course. Head over to Amazon to get a copy of my latest book, Finding Gold Dust: How to Create Exceptional Customer Experiences. The book is endorsed by a former executive vice president of Walt Disney Resort. And finally, visit my website at www.gavinscott.me and sign up for some more free content. Until next time, stay memorable.